good to catch up with you. And I see you almost started an uprising in Saskatchewan yesterday. What happened there?
Whew. I mean, there was a reporter who revealed some of who it looks like the end of season awards nominees are going to be. I don't agree with those nominations, but I guess the larger issue for me is that it does seem like this tends to happen out of Saskatchewan a fair bit. And I wonder if there isn't some strategic voting going on, which is not supposed to be the way it's happening. But, ultimately, it's a fight that I said a couple things and I might have crossed some lines. Who knows? But you know what? People in Saskatchewan get mad if you talk about the CFL and don't exclusively say nice things about the Riders. So, I'll live with it. It's okay.
They love them some Riders, and I think we all wish every fan base in Canada for the CFL was as passionate as those fans, whether you agree with them or not.
Exactly. And you know what? I mean, Cody Bejardo has had a great year. He would not have been my nomination for most outstanding player. That I did vote for Willie Jefferson, and I think Fajardo came in number two. But you know what? He had a great season. It's ultimately these awards. Part of the goal is ultimately to spur some debate. Saskatchewan fans are awesome. I love my trips to Regina, and I love the fans there. So it's, you know what, if we're not debating and we're not arguing at this point of the year, it probably means that the CFL didn't have a particularly engaging season. So this isn't the worst thing.
Andrew Harris and his candidacy was a flashpoint as well, correct?
It sure was. Look, Andrew Harris, three of the voters in Winnipeg ultimately decided not to nominate him for team awards because he did test positive. That was around Labor Day. It is, an issue for the people who have to make these votes. You make a decision. Does that disqualify you or not? Obviously, the CFL decided to keep him on the ballot. For me, I've been covering sports for a long time, including mixed martial arts, and I've heard contaminated supplements as an excuse for some of these tests for quite a long time. So for me, I couldn't give him the benefit of the doubt. That's not to say that it wasn't accidental. It may very well have been, but for me, his explanation didn't cross the line into exoneration. So I didn't feel this season that I could have voted for him for postseason awards or for All-Stars, and I didn't. There are certainly people who did. I have been quite vocal that I think you need to justify the way you voted publicly either way. Some people have chosen to do that, others haven't. But look, if you test positive for any of these banned substances, it is ultimately going to be a talking point, and it has been. And Andrew Harris had a great year, but unfortunately for a lot of us, we just can't vote for him.
Danny Austin of the Calgary Sun and Herald joining me here on the Scott Rintoul Show. And I think it's a great debate going outside of football and really across sports. We've seen this with Hall of Fame voting in Major League Baseball. But your broader point of, look, if you want the responsibility of voting for awards or being on a Hall of Fame selection committee, whatever it happens to be, let's have it public. And the NHL awards, for example, the Professional Hockey Writers Association, they've done this in recent years. And if you don't have the stomach for it, you don't have to vote, but that's the way they've gone. Why do people who vote for these awards want the anonymity?
I mean, I think that there would be an argument, and it's not one I'm making, right? I'm just explaining. I want these completely public. But there's an argument that, look, I mean, I'm at McMahon Stadium covering the Stampeders every single day. I obviously have relationships. Voting against one of my guys could affect that relationship. So I do think that that's part of it. That's the only explanation I can think of. I personally think that, the way that these end-of-season awards and all-star nominations sort of define the narrative surrounding a player. So I think that there's a real responsibility to take them seriously. And if you're a voter, it's a responsibility. And I don't think that making it public would in any way harm myself as a reporter. And if I can't take, those relationships being slightly damaged, then I probably shouldn't be voting. I think it's something that has to change.
Yeah, you and I agree. In all my years covering sports, the only time I've ever seen athletes take issue with a statement or a commentary is when it isn't based in fact, when it's simply opinion that doesn't have any true root based in fact. But you're talking about accountability here. And as we segue into what happened with the BC Lions yesterday, that was a big talking point for Ed Hervey. He used the word structure a lot. He talked about not having enough structure this year under Devon Claybrook. So he gets rid of him after 1 year on the job, the former defensive coordinator of the Calgary Stampeders. What did you think of the way it went down?
I didn't like it. It left a bit of a sour taste in my mouth. I obviously have worked, every day. I've interviewed Devon countless times. I wouldn't say that I have a relationship with him, but I know him. To be perfectly honest, I think that when a team is hiring a first-year coach, a guy who's never been a head coach before, there has to be mentorship, and there has to be a little bit of patience as they figure out the job. It's the same as any job. And if there wasn't structure, and that was something that was observable for me from Ed Hervey, he has a responsibility to step in and fix it and guide Clay Brooks. And I think that, for these first year coaches, they deserve a second shot unless it goes completely wrong. And don't get me wrong, for a while, it was pretty bad there in Vancouver. But I do think that, a lot of the things that we pinpointed, like Clay Brooks hiring position coaches who were probably a little too inexperienced. He probably, as a first-year coach, could have used some veteran hands helping him out along the way. Those are things that are fixable, and I don't necessarily know that this should have fallen completely on Clay Brooks, especially given that, in the offseason, there was a lot of free agency money spent, and I think that a lot of us would argue now that a lot of it was spent in the wrong places. So I think that Clay Brooks, in my opinion, was starting the year shorthanded, and I think he should have been given a second option, but I do understand that, there were consultations with players and stuff, and that ultimately this was the decision, but it's not one that sits well with me.
Comes during a week in which Rick Campbell is suddenly available because he chooses to leave the Red Blacks organization. There might be an opening in Toronto. They're still evaluating there what to do with Corey Chamberlain. If all three jobs are available, BC, Ottawa, Toronto, which is the most attractive?
I think it's probably BC. Being in the West Division, it's obviously a little bit of a harder job to kind of turn around and be in contention right away. It's tough because you look around the league, and in the next week and a half, who knows what happens with the Bombers if they lose to the Stampeders this weekend? They've been rolling with the same coaching group for a while. Mike O'Shea might be interested in that job in Toronto, given that he played with Pinball Clemens quite a bit. For me, I look at Jason Moss and Ed Hervey's relationships, and you can't wonder if that relationship from Edmonton might pull over into BC. But I think playing in the West, if you're a coach like Rick Campbell, there's definitely some appeal there. Of course, the fact that his family are sort of legends in Edmonton means that Edmonton's probably the most attractive for him. But I think BC's, look, you got Mike Riley. There's some nice pieces there. You got to build up the offensive line, the defensive line a little bit. But I don't think the Lions are that far off, is the truth. So that's probably where you want to go, as opposed to a Toronto where it's a complete rebuilding process, and Ottawa where we just don't know what's going on there.
No, it's a very good point, and you're right about the quarterback. That is the building block for any franchise, and that's the one thing that is currently in place in BC. Danny Austin of the Calgary Sun and Herald joined me on the Scott Rintoul Show. Speaking of quarterbacks, Western semifinal this weekend. We know who the Stampeders are going to roll with, and why wouldn't they? What is your best guess as to how the Blue Bombers are going to employ the quarterbacks there? Zach Caleros and Chris Streveler, they're both going to be healthy for this game. What do they do?
I can tell you that Dave Dickinson almost rolled his eyes when I asked him a similar question. He expects to see both. I think Zach Caleros is going to start. He did pretty well against the Stampeders 2 weeks ago. He can throw the ball. He gives them a little bit more of a well-rounded offense. So that's what makes sense. That said, if the Bombers can get up and, you want to run the clock and just kind of run the ball as much as possible to grind down the Stampeders defense, Chris Trevler is the perfect guy. So it wouldn't surprise me, if things go well for Winnipeg, to see Caleros play the first half. And if they're up sort of 10, 11 points, go with Strebler from there on, because it's kind of a perfect strategy against the Stampeders team that's pretty beat up. So that's sort of what I expect, but I think Zach's going to be the starter. I don't think there's any real question there.
I agree with that, although I'll one-up you. I can see Paul LaPolice, just because of the way he's operated in the past, I can see him changing them drive to drive, not alternating all the way, but I could see Caleros play the first two and then all of a sudden throw the changeup of Chris Streveler coming in, and he's running the offense next time. Could you see that?
100%, and I think it's what the Stampeders are preparing for. The interesting thing is the Stampeders generally play, four defensive linemen and sort of two linebackers. I wouldn't be surprised if they are switching things up on defense to confuse the Bombers, to try to stay ahead of them and just kind of make sure that it's not that easy for LaPolice. But you have two pretty good weapons. They're very different. That's going to throw a defense off. Why wouldn't you use both of your weapons? I mean, it's one of those situations where neither of these guys are so firmly established as the starters that I think they're going to get offended by being taken out for a series or even one or two plays. So, yeah, I mean, I think you're dead on there. I think we're going to see both.
It feels like one of the more fascinating reasons to watch the game, and there's plenty of them, including I'm not sure who the Stampeders are dressing. As you've reported this week, they might get some reinforcements back. They might not. Who are we talking about as far as guys who can impact this game that Calgary may have back in the lineup?
I mean, if we're looking specifically at last week's game against the Lions, you know, you're going to get three starting defensive backs back in the lineup. You're going to get Trey Roberson, who I think was the best defensive back in the entire league. You're going to get Deshaun Amos, who was an all-star, and you're going to get Royce Metchie, who I think probably should have been an all-star. Those are three big pieces in the defensive backfield, and their secondary has been very good this year. They go after the ball. So I think those are the immediate ones. The big ones yesterday who we were surprised to see, a little bit surprised, were Corey Greenwood, a linebacker who was leading the CFL in tackles. He's 34, 35 years old, and he had some real he had stingers, but more serious than what you and I think of as stingers. There was real sort of paralysis and stuff involved. And he's back, and I mean, he's playing, and he's saying he's ready to go. Dave Dickinson won't confirm that. The issue there is ultimately you can't do much contact in practice. You don't know how his body is going to react to hits. And the other surprise was Kamar Jordan, who hasn't played since last year's Labor Day Classic, but was probably the best receiver in the league last summer. Just a really dynamic player. He was practicing, and he was taking a lot of starters reps yesterday in place of Eric Rogers, who hasn't been available for the last week and a half. So that receiver position, that slot receiver position, is definitely going to be one to watch because there's a lot of talent there where we don't know who is available.
This is the first time we've seen the Stampeders host the Western Semi in quite some time. They're always hosting the Western Final. Under Dave Dickinson, all they've done is go to Grey Cups. And for Dave and the Stampeders, there have been different pressure each year. The first year, well, you're taking over from Huff. How's that going to go? Gets to the Grey Cup. Second year, oh, geez, you lost the Grey Cup in dramatic fashion. What do you do the next time? You lose it again in dramatic fashion. So there was a ton of pressure last year. Ultimately, Calgary closes. You're hosting the Grey Cup in Calgary this year. How does the pressure this season compare to what we've seen in the other aspects of the Dave Dickinson regime?
It's been a really interesting season because, you know, we think of this as sort of just being a straight line season to season. The Stampeders had so much turnover in the offseason. Alex Singleton went to the NFL. Jameer Thurman, who was the other linebacker, is still going after his NFL dream. I think that there was something like seven of the defensive starters from last year's Grey Cup team weren't there. So I think that early on, there wasn't a ton of pressure. I think that it was about building. It was understanding that there were going to be mistakes, especially when Bo Levi Mitchell kind of missed 7 weeks. So in the early going, I don't think he felt the pressure. I think he feels it now. I think that the Stampeders ultimately, yes, they want to be playing in a home Grey Cup, but it's just maintaining that standard, right? I mean, they're there every year. It drives people out of the market nuts when we say it, but they are kind of the Patriots. They're just there every single year. So that's, I think, more where the pressure is coming from, is that internally the expectations of that you're playing to the Grey Cup. So, I don't know if it's necessarily, you know, translating into any negative pressure, but this is something that the guys expect. They expect to beat the Bombers this week, and then they expect to go into Saskatchewan and win there. And, with those expectations, you know, come a lot of different emotions. And we're going to see how it plays out because it's not always a good thing for young players to be feeling a ton of pressure.
No, it's not. And I guess this is only a question the fans can really answer. But very quickly, do you get the sense the fans in Calgary expect them to be hosting the Grey Cup and playing in it? Or because of all the success that maybe, hey, we want them there, but if they don't get there, it's not the end of the world?
I think it's sort of, it's more the latter. I think it's more, look, if they don't make it, it's not the end of the world. People desperately want them to be there, but I think that they understand the challenge that the season presents. I will say that if they beat the Bombers, I think the Bombers are a tougher matchup than the Riders for the Stampeders, even though the Riders game will be in Saskatchewan. If they beat the Bombers, the expectation is that you beat the Riders and are there. The expectations will change and people will be demanding it, and that they beat the Riders, in my opinion. So it's kind of over the next week it'll change, but for right now, I think people are more just curious. They're curious to see what this team is because I don't think we have a good read on it yet.
Danny, great stuff. Really appreciate it. Love flying around the CFL with you. Next time I get you on, I promise we will talk a little Kawhi Leonard. We'll talk a little Toronto Raptors. I know what a big NBA guy you are as well.
Yeah. We'll talk about all the money I spent on that team over the last 6 months.
It was worth it.
It was worth every penny. Well, yeah, man, thanks. It's always a pleasure and would love to talk NBA. So cheers.
Danny Austin of the Calgary Sun and Herald.